In the last 10 years, our field has gone from an unknown specialty to a household name. This brings unprecedented opportunities, but we need to rise up to meet them and give our patients the care that they deserve. In order to help others get better, we need to be better. This podcast will help you to become more confident with your patients, more successful in your practice or business, and a leader in pelvic health. And we're gonna have some fun along the way. Join us as we rise together. We're Jesse and Nicole Cozine, founders of Pelvic Sanity Physical Therapy and the creators of the Pelvic PT Huddle. And this is Pelvic PT Rising.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Pelvic PT Rising podcast with Jesse and Nicole Cozine. Hey Nicole.
Hello.
So talking today about when patients are complex, get simple. This is going to be a really, I think, important episode for a lot of people out there. But before we do, we have to talk about the news of the day. Nicole, Clay just had his 15-month check-in and is now in the 75th percentile of height.
He sure is. We are moving on up in the baby world.
Right. No thanks to Nicole.
No thanks to me. People will actually are always surprised to know that Jesse is actually quite tall. Jesse, how tall are you?
I am 6'4".
Right. So I feel like because Jesse always like bends down or like spreads his legs to make our heights more even in pictures.
And whose idea is that?
It's not mine. That's your idea.
As you kick out my knee.
I don't kick out anybody's knee. Anyways, so Jesse always like tries to act like we're the same height, and then everyone's super surprised when he's like a giant.
Right. Well, this is a perfect example too, though, Nicole, of confirmation bias, because for a long time he was right in the 50th percentile, and I would be going home and reading about this stuff, and I was like, this is so stupid. Why is our pediatrician even putting this stuff into his stupid little algorithm? There's no predictive value. I've looked at the data. There's no predictive value in any measurements that are taken under 2 years of age. This is so stupid. And all of a sudden, he hit 75th percentile. I'm like, oh my gosh, take it to the bank. He's going to be a giant. This is amazing.
Oh, and then I'm sitting there being like, hoping I don't ruin him later by being like, well, I mean, why is he only in the 75th percentile? He should definitely be in the 99th percentile of everything all the time.
Right.
Except for the bad things.
Right. Well, then head size is on the smaller end. And he looks at us and he goes, does anybody in the family have a big head? And immediately Nicole points at me and goes, oh, Jesse's got a big head.
In more ways than one.
Right. And the poor pediatrician didn't know whether he was allowed to laugh at that. I was like, it's okay. It only stings a little. But guys, it's pretty exciting. Dude, he is so rad. It's just such a little fun age. He's like trash talking other kids. Basically, like anybody under the age of 40, he just walks up to and goes, baby.
So he does this at the park. And apparently, like, the other little kids are getting super mad, right? So all the three-year-olds are being like, why is he calling me a baby? I'm not a baby. And we're like, that certainly is what a baby would say.
Boom.
Boom. Trash talking already.
All right. We love it, guys. So that's the Clay update. One other update for you guys. If you're listening to this on the day that it drops, the Vagus Nerve Treatment Masterclass is opening up tomorrow on the 23rd. Nicole, so excited about this. Your masterclasses are, if anybody hasn't taken one out there, super practical, super targeted stuff you can use literally the next day. They're bite-sized. They're cheap. They're $47. Man, this is going to just, it will change your practice. I get so excited about these because people go to like a whole two-day course with the hope of taking away 1 to 3 really practical things that they can use the next time. Here, you're going to go to a 90-minute thing and take away 1 to 3 things you can use the next day.
Yeah, like, so this is it. Efficient. And this one in particular, I'm really excited about because my other two masterclasses are straight webinar, and this one's going to be webinar plus some pre-recorded videos so that you will have access to all of the treatment techniques that we go over. So you can take those with you into the clinic.
All right. So make sure if you are not already checking it out, if you are getting this and listening to this before the 23rd, you're getting on the wait list. That's publicbgrising.com/Vegas. If you are after, listen to this later, it should be open and you are ready to rock and roll. Go ahead and make sure you register. Again, $47, amazing content. It's going to definitely be worth your time. So, Nicole, talk to me about this idea that when patients are complex, start simple or get simple. I know this came from a question from one of our staff members. Like, walk me through, where did this idea come from?
Yeah, so I love all of our staff at Pelvic Sanity. They're always thinking, using their brains and just like really trying to do the best for their patients. And that allows us to talk a lot about different cases and stuff like that. And so one of my clinicians came to me and was like, basically said, I don't even really know where the heck to start. This person is so complex. And, you know, sometimes as a 20-year person in this field, when somebody says like, oh, this person's really complex, I'm like, ah, they're probably not complex. And objectively, this person had a shit ton of stuff going on. They were getting worked up for potential neurological issues, potentially had a rare being immunocompromised in some way, like everything that you could possibly think of that could make a pelvic floor condition more complex and sort of more mythical, this person had. You know, she had all of the things of, you know, what a typical pelvic health person would have, fall on the tailbone when you're a kid, and history of trauma, and. So all of the like things that you would typically think of with a really complex pelvic health thing, and also was getting worked up for some really relatively medically complex things. She had already had a lot of complex and pretty rare medical procedures. And all that is to say is that this person came and filled out their intake form to the nines. I mean, it was so in depth and, you know, red pen everywhere with where does it hurt and every single medical test that she's ever had and just so much detail with all of the things that could potentially be going wrong. And we've all had a little bit of this sort of deer in the headlights, I bet, feeling when you get somebody in your clinic that is like, oh shit, like they're writing down things in their potential other diagnoses that I don't even know. I have to like look this stuff up. I don't know what's happening with their pelvic floor. This seems like they've tried 8 million different doctors. Everyone's saying something different. Like we've all had the like, oh shit, what do I do with these types of patients? And essentially this is what my clinician was coming to me with, is basically like, I actually don't even know where to start. I don't even know if I can help her. That was one of her things. I don't even know if I can help her. I don't know if it's appropriate for me to see her, which is a lot of times what we also think as well. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to make a difference in a way that's going to be meaningful to this patient.
So Nicole, that's actually really interesting. We see this a ton in the huddle as well. And I love these posts. So don't stop posting these, but you get a lot of folks like the same thing, right? Is this person had this really complex medical history. What do I do when you haven't yet seen them? And I don't know, Nicole, as a complete non-clinician, tell me if this is correct or incorrect, but I feel like it's almost, we talk a lot in business mentorship about soundtracks. Anybody who's part of the Rising programs is rolling their eyes at me, but yes, we do. But I feel like it starts this soundtrack that you have to be perfect, that you have to have the exact right technique and the right referral in the right order and find the right thing and hone in on the exact thing that everyone else in their medical team has missed for years or decades. And you have to be that like perfect savior when you see somebody with all of this stuff. And I feel like that might be where you're getting to with this, like, start simple.
Yes. So I do feel like we can have that feeling of like, oh, well, the answer, because this person is presenting super complex, the answer that I have to provide must be also super complex and also can't be super obvious. And I am coming here today on this podcast episode to give y'all the permission, regardless of how many years you've been treating. I don't care if you've been treating, you know, you just started, you're seeing your first patient today, or you've been treating for 35 years. I'm giving you the permission right now to start simple. And simple interventions and getting back to the basics of the foundations of pelvic health are, in fact, sometimes where you need to start and can be profound in that patient's journey. It doesn't have to be super complex in order for it to be super effective.
You know, that reminds me, Nicole, of something that you and I both still laugh about is, and I don't even remember back when we watched this, but we were watching basketball. Everybody knows we're big basketball fans. We're watching a finals game with Phil Jackson, one of the greatest coaches of all time, Kobe Bryant, one of the most intellectual and smart players of all time. This team of Lakers who had won multiple championships were all veterans, and they get in the huddle. There's 2 minutes left. It's a pressure-packed situation. There's all this stuff going on. Everybody's calling these new plays and doing all the things, and Phil Jackson is there saying what?
Move your feet. Move your feet. Play defense. Hands up. See man and ball.
Right. Literally the most basic stuff, the things that you hear when you're 5 years old and you're first starting the game, he's reminding them of these basic things. Box out, rebound. I don't know soccer very well, but if it was a soccer coach, he'd probably be saying, use your feet, not your hands, right? It's like that freaking basic stuff. And I thought that was so interesting in this most pressure-packed environment with all of these stakes in this thing that feels really, really complex. He's reminding everybody to get back to the basics. And that's the stuff that got you here. That's the stuff you've been practicing. That's the stuff that's going to take you forward.
Yes. And so we're going to go through just a few things here that can bring you back to the basics. And one of the things I think that happens when we can get caught up in how complex a patient is presenting, or honestly, how complex a patient thinks that they are, or how complex they've been told that they are, I feel like we, again, don't just stop and not get caught up in that. So how do we not get caught up in the patient's perception of their own complexity? And I will tell you this, that the more complex that a patient presents as, it's very likely that their recollection of facts that have happened to them, the events of their pelvic health history, are going to be a little inaccurate. And that's not to discount their experience. So I truly believe that when patients are presenting facts to us, that they are telling us what has happened to them and what their perception of what has happened to them is. But, and this is a big but, the accuracy of those facts and the timeline and the order in which those things have happened is a lot of times inaccurate. And it got jumbled in their brain. Things have gotten compressed together. They've, you know, aren't happening in the timeline that the patient is presenting. And so one of the things that we can do to sort of help that is to get better facts from them. And we can't necessarily go back in time and actually play back the video of their life and be like, oh, actually, you started this symptom right when you had your baby, and not when 5 years later when he started playing soccer. So we can't do that. Although that was a really interesting Black Mirror episode. Do you remember that?
Yeah, where there's like video on all of us all the time and you get to read. Oh my gosh, if that technology exists, sign me up. I know it didn't turn out well for the people in Black Mirror, but Nicole, the number of times you tell me that I didn't listen to something that you said, and I say, that's a funny way to start a conversation. It's interesting. I just don't think that you say everything that you think you said.
Whatever. Right. We do need this technology.
We do need the
but
technology.
But we don't have it for our patients, okay? And so if we don't have that, where can we start, right? So we can sometimes get a more accurate timeline from a significant other, from actually having them go back and as homework, make this timeline a little bit better versus just like a verbal vomit of what they think that they remember at the time. But what I am more interested in is the more recent past of and really the recent future, essentially, of what their symptoms are right now. What is going on this minute? And a lot of times that means that we just need to give them like a simple symptom tracker. What is actually happening right now? What is the activities that you're doing during the day? Or a simple bladder diary. And I am always one to do, if I'm going to make someone do something as annoying as a bladder diary, and remember when we were doing this, it is actually objectively really annoying. So if we're going to make some of our patients do something annoying, then I'd rather have get all of the information. So I actually have my patients most always do bladder, bowel, food, and output diary, as well as activity and then any notes that they have. So I actually have people do all of it for like 4 or 5 days. And it can be profound to actually get what is happening throughout their day. A little tip here is that sometimes you can actually have them give you yesterday's stuff as their first day so that they can't change what they did because they know they're going to have to report it to you. So getting that basic with what is going into your mouth, what is coming out of your body can really be super helpful in starting simple.
So first is get a better picture of what is actually going on with whatever the appropriate tracking diary is. I'm assuming like hormone or period tracking goes into this for people who that's applicable for, right? That kind of stuff.
Yes.
Getting a better picture. Then where do you go, Nicole? So you've got a little bit of a better picture, which, by the way, is more than any of their other practitioners are doing because they don't have the time with them to actually do that.
Or explain why it's super important. I mean, we have so many advantages to help give patients the context by which this is going to become important. And I can't emphasize that enough, that most people have never had a practitioner that is putting all the pieces together. Like, we can do that for people. I actually told my clinician, I was like, remember the term, she used to work like in a more like hospital-based neuro-ortho setting. And I'm like, remember the term like nurse navigator, where there was like one point of contact that was the person that was like telling somebody like who they should see and where they should go and what they should do. It's like, we are that person. Another way we put it is that we're the quarterback of the patient's care. Once they're in our ecosystem, we're the person. We're the only one that is seeing them frequently. At our clinic, we're seeing them for at least an hour, sometimes two. We're the only ones that they have their time to tell their story, that we can actually ask questions. We can have them come back and next week give us more accurate information. That's not what's happening at any other physician's office, okay? So we are the ones that can really start to put those pieces together. And that in and of itself is a simple intervention. It's like just giving a shit and trying to be logical with where they are right now and trying to help them to navigate the medical system. Like, it can be that simple.
So if step one, Nicole, is helping them navigate, being the quarterback, getting a better picture, then where do you go from that with somebody who has so much going on that you feel like you just have to be perfect in your interventions? Like, where do you go with that kind of person?
Well, the first thing you need to do is you need to just take that out of your brain, that you have to do something perfect, that the intervention that you pick has to be the best one. But you are going to pick some sort of intervention that kills multiple birds with one stone. So I do want you to think of some things that you know well that you can have this patient change or do or add that are going to influence multiple systems. And this is why, my friends, that a lot of us end up going back to things like breathing, movement, and some of the foundations of pelvic health. But I want you to think about putting this into context for the patient. So it's not, hey, I need you to do deep breathing. I said this to my dad the other day ago. We'll have to tell you about his story recently. But long story short, during one of the rising retreats that we just had, he had an emergency appendectomy. And so I saw him a few days afterwards, and my mom was trying to tell him how to do some deep breathing stuff. And he goes, I think I'm doing fine. I'm standing here, right? He got super annoyed that someone was telling him how to breathe. And I was like, that right there is why we have to give context to our simple interventions. So that's the only complex part about what we're doing, is that we have to give context to things that are seemingly so simple and help patients to see that they can actually have profound changes. But you're going to pick something that influences multiple body systems. So to give an example, breathing changes pressure systems in the abdominal pelvic cavity. It changes orthopedic rib expansion. It activates your parasympathetic nervous system. It helps circulation, right? It's hitting a ton of, it decreases inflammation. It activates the lymphatic system. So it hits multiple body systems. That's why it's so profound. And so that's one example of why breathing, we usually go back to that. It's not because someone told us to do it in a Herman and Wallace course. It's not because you saw it on Instagram and you could, oh, get excited that box breathing is a thing. It's not about that. It's because it influences multiple body systems at one time.
So what else kind of, Nicole, falls in that? I love the way that you describe that too, as something that influences multiple body systems, but something that you know well. So I like that. I've heard you talk about this enough with our staff. Like, we've had some staff come through who have amazing yoga backgrounds. It's like, great, then use those principles and find something within that that you know well, that you're confident in. I mean, this is the reason that we don't hold our people back from complex patients. Like, we have somebody who is a new grad who 6 weeks in is seeing an out-of-town patient because there's stuff that you guys can do.
Yes. Yes. And so, I mean, we've had people with Pilates backgrounds. It's like, great. Well, you know that well, then all you're going to do is take the principles of whatever it is, in this case, breathing, or in the case of a complex patient, they have like lower abdominal activation, and use your Pilates-based principles for that. Like, you know more than you think you know. And the point here is that use something that you know well or well enough and be able to implement that to influence multiple body systems. And that's what we're really doing when we're doing something like breathing. Or this is another go-to of mine, like walking. This is where I feel like somebody that looked at my, everyone's always like, Nicole, I want to know like what your treatment techniques are. What are you doing? And it's like, if someone really looked at my actual treatment notes, they'd be like, what the hell? This chick's a fraud. Right? But it's not about the exactly what you're doing. So if I wrote, oh, therapeutic exercises or HEP, walk 5 minutes a day, I'm not doing that because it's not something that can't be profound. It's because it influences multiple body systems and it's something that the patient can do that's easy. And it's something that I don't have to spend a ton of time on explaining the mechanics of how to do it. I just want them to do it. Because it can improve circulation, it can improve lymphatic system, it can improve breathing, it can help the muscular pump of venous return, it can help nervous system. If I add a little mindfulness walking to it, it can help with calming the nervous system. It's reciprocal action of the brain to help with like some EMDR techniques. Like it can be profound. And so just because the intervention is simple doesn't mean that it's not appropriate for a complex patient.
So then, Nicole, coming back a little bit full circle here to vagus nerve techniques, because that's what we've always been talking about a lot the last couple of weeks, I feel like those start to fall into that multiple birds with one stone or multiple systems with one intervention type of thing that you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, the vagus nerve has connections to the abdominal viscera. It has connections to gut health. It has connections to the inflammation system. It has connections to mood, breathing, stress, heart rate variability. And it can be something that is relatively simple for you to physically do with your patient. And it can be profound and it can influence multiple body systems. And that's why I feel like it's so important for us to, when we're dealing with these complex patients, is to get back to basics, get simple. What is something that is influencing all of pain and inflammation and hypersensitivity of touch and tissues and all and pelvic floor overactivity? All of that can be an overactivity of the sympathetic nervous system and not enough activation of the parasympathetic system. And that's one of the most profound things. I think so often that we talk about nervous system downregulation, we're talking about sympathetic nervous system turning the volume knob down. But it's equally, if not more important, to turn the parasympathetic volume up.
which, unless you're extremely confident in your skills in this area, Nicole, is why people need to check out this masterclass for more ideas on techniques and abilities to do this.
Right, because it's not just about breathing. As profound as breathing can be, activating the vagus nerve is not only breathing, and we can go beyond that, and it's going to be so awesome for your patients. And so going back to then what I told my clinician, I told her basically this, like there's a couple of things that you need to make sure that she's getting from her current medical team. So we're talking about quarterbacking her care. What areas do we feel that she needs to hone in on there? And what information do we need back from those people so that we can help her to navigate the medical system? So that's number one. Number two was get some real data, and then we can analyze that data. And I'm talking simple stuff, cycle tracking, symptom logging, bowel food, bladder diary, that kind of stuff, that simple stuff. Then we can start to see patterns in where she currently is sitting, not where she was 10 years ago, not where she thinks she was 5 years ago, not what she thinks happened yesterday, but what is actually happening right now. And then we can pick the thing from that data that kills the most birds with one stone. And that's where we intervene. And that's the most simple of interventions that we can do.
So I hope that that gives you guys out there maybe some less experience, or who still get a little bit of that fight or flight experience when you've got somebody on your schedule who has that super complex medical history. That gives you guys a little bit of peace of mind that when patients are complex, get simple. You guys have all the tools that you need there. So hope this has been helpful for you guys. If you do want to dive in with us on this vagus nerve treatment stuff, make sure that you are checking that out. You can find all of the information, register or get on the wait list at pelvicptrising.com/vagus. As always, there'll be a replay available if you can't make the live recording of that. And Nicole's going to be recording a lot of hands-on treatment techniques and all of the really practical stuff for you guys. So as always, we appreciate every single one of you listening. We'd love to keep this conversation going.
And let's continue to rise.